So to sum up our the past few days of very interesting talks, Joe Polchinski will make a few remarks on quivers and slivers.
Well, I wasn't happy to be asked to do this for a couple of reasons. One is that it meant that, in the opinion of the organizers, I had reached a certain level of maturity that I wasn't really prepared for. And the other is, of course, that it meant that I had to pay attention to all the talks. But in fact, it was a very rewarding experience, the paying attention bit, not the maturity, because they were really great talks. The format of the conference with long talks and long breaks, I think, was very relaxing and stimulating for everyone, and the range of subject matter was also very stimulating. So let's thank the organizers for a job well done and a well-designed conference. So yeah, I was asked to get the title, and that doesn't capture all of the talks, but captures about half of them. Actually, now that we are inviting phenomenologists to our conferences, we have to learn their language. They have different names for these things. So I thought that one way to make my work easier would be to ignore the talks. And since everybody was required to give 5 minutes of vision, I would just summarize the vision. But as you know, it didn't work that way. Some people, like Tom and Gary, overproduced in the vision department. And others didn't at all, for reasons that were very well expressed by Igor. Prediction is really impossible. He gave a very nice discussion of predictions that were sure things didn't come to pass. We've seen another one this past week. The Lakers will sweep. So it's on to the talks themselves. And I thought I would try to organize things a bit. Oops, I need a transparency for this. There are sort of two very big questions at the two ends of our subject. Up here at the very top of the transparency, what is string theory, or M theory? What is the fundamental principle from which everything else comes? And down here in the nether regions, how do we connect M theory to the real world?
There really is a nether region.
Yeah. Heaven. Okay. Well, anyway, there you go. Now, this is a useful framework for listing the talks. Before I do, I should say this is really a false dichotomy. These two, really this thing should be periodically connected. These two questions are much more closely connected than I'm letting on. Also I'm going to have fun sort of putting the talks at one end or the other, but then, you know, many talks escape characterization. The authors will object to where I put them. Also, the truth is, whatever one is working on, one should be keeping one's eyes open for something serendipitous. And whether you're currently working on this question or currently working on this question, you might discover something that's relevant somewhere you didn't expect. Okay, so to start with, we had some talks that are easy to place. We had three talks on string field theory. So that was Barton. Never remember IE or EI. Sam Gross. String field theory. Clearly, string field theory is going into new places. It's not just new slices on old world sheets. This very nice structure of the Witten open string field theory is playing seemingly a deeper role, and there are these elegant constructions of multi-V-brain solutions. David expressed a very good goal for this, a short-term goal for this, which is to really try to see if one can make open string field theory a non-perturbative definition of the subject, so that it would be as good as matrix theory. although, it's a really a long way off, because you realize all of this hard work is being done all of this hard work is being done just to define the classical field space and the classical Hamiltonian before one tries to path integrate over this space. So it's still a ways off. There's always been a figure of merit, which is especially useful in string field theory. Does one get more out of it than one puts into it? So I tried to calculate this ratio, output over input, but I must have done something wrong because I got 0/0. Okay. Now, another clump of talks were on G2, and actually here I already have to refine my classification, because down here at the real world, actually, we can separate it into really phenomenology and model building on the one side, and just application to gauge theory. In the past few years, we've used string theory to teach us new things about gauge theory. So I guess I'm going to separate the real world into phenomenology and gauge phenomenology, model building, and gauge physics, using string theory to learn about gauge theory. So we have our G2 talks. That was Acharya, Witten, and Aganagic. You know, G2 is how you get from M theory to N equals 1 supersymmetry, the easiest way. And so after the discovery of M theory in 1995, it was natural to think about G2 holonomy. And I was kind of curious why it took 6 years for this sudden peak of interest to occur. And I asked quite a number of people and received a number of answers, some of them rather technical, some of them rather cynical. but the only one I'll repeat was Cumrins, who said, "What do you mean I was working on this in 1994? Anyway, it's clear that this is beautiful geometry and provides a beautiful geometric realization of gauge theory physics, also a connection between mirror symmetry down into A theory and the physics up in M theory. Also in gauge theory, we have two B constructions by Klebanov, which, as you know, I like very much since I've gone and applied them over here. Also, I think it's correct to say these are still, in some sense, have more in them than these, because the M theory constructions are really in the universality class of gauge theories that have confinement, Carroll symmetry, breaking all the stuff you expect. Whereas this is really a dual representation, a four-dimensional field theory in new variables, and so there is, in some sense, more in this. One more very beautiful talk by Cumrin. Connections between geometry and gauge physics, and really very nice ways of understanding Seiberg-Witten dualities and other gauge dualities very, very broadly. Now, in phenomenology, there's a variety of talks sort of in the direction of technology transfer from string theory towards model building, which of course has been a real interesting activity the last few years. There was my talk trying to really sort of stay on the string theory side, but work towards something realistic looking. There was Savas's talk, which took some of the ingredients of string theory, five brains and so on. But it was a little bit, this? Oh, this. Should I repeat all that? No. Just a joke. Okay. So since this has just been turned on, I will say string field theory and everybody laughs. Good. Okay. Okay, so Savas, who took really still hewing fairly closely to string theory, taking real ingredients like five brains, but being a bit more sort of loose in model building in his use of them. And finally, Arkani Hamed, who really took only the barest parts of string theory, the idea of extra dimensions, got some good ideas from it, and then threw out as much as he could. I just want to pick out a couple of high points here. In Nima's talk, you know, we're all very proud and excited about the fact that in the last few years, string theory has solved long-standing problems in quantum gravity, like the black hole entropy, and also has made new connections to mathematics. Nima pointed out that using string-based ideas, he had solved a long-standing problem in Technicolor. That, seriously, the problem of finding natural, of getting the Higgs as a pseudo-Goldstone boson in a natural way. It's kind of bizarre when you think about it. And Savas, of course, said a number of things, but the one I want to most pick out is he reminded us that 2006 is fast approaching, which is true, and more important, very likely the discovery of supersymmetry is fast approaching. So whatever we do as theorists in the next 5 years or however long it takes, we have this this to look forward to. And since supersymmetry was, after all, an outgrowth of string theory, we should be prepared to take credit for it. Okay. But also to think about it, you know, to really spend some time thinking about supersymmetry phenomenology and about what we're going to learn from it. Okay, let me see. The order doesn't really matter. Up there in the direction, what is M-theory? We had a couple of talks on D-brain charges. The less mathematical talk was given by Greg Moore. I never thought I'd say that. That's even weirder than the Technicolor bit. But really, it was very beautiful seeing the way d-instanton processes, you know, accounted physically for some of the k-theory construction. Also, I think it was very interesting the moral that charge was lost from the part that k-theory sees. I think I understood this correctly, into things that k-theory doesn't see. That they're really physical. That physics knows about things that k-theory doesn't, at least in those examples, because there was this k-theory classification, and then things weren't conserved. Charge flowed over there. And then there was Diakonescu's talk. I get one free pass, and I'm going to use it for this talk. This is no criticism. I'm just not the right person. It clearly was a very exciting talk. There was animated discussion afterwards. People nearly were coming to blows over category theory. I realized in the very last, there was one more talk in this category of D-brain charges. I put this up, by the way, in the question, what is M-theory? Because it's clearly a very fundamental question. At the same time, this is one of those things which is going to have applications. All of these things are connected, have applications in other areas, but also John's talk, of course, showing how one could understand the Chern-Simons action, the induced Ramon-Dermon charges, in terms of something we've known about for a long time, anomaly cancellation. Also, in particular, some interesting space-filling cases, so new theories up in 10 dimensions. Now, Tom's talk, my first reaction was that this belongs up here in the what is M theory. But then I realized as I was listening to him that no, this is actually a finished theory, this theory of nested Hilbert spaces. And he's actually gone on to making detailed cosmological predictions. So this goes down here in phenomenology. Yep. This is only partly a joke, because in fact, in this false dichotomy, cosmology is really probably the place where the two questions, what are the fundamental principles, and how do we connect it to the real world, come closest together. We want to understand that. Out of string theory, one of the places we might hope to find the smoking gun, the distinctive signature, would be in its predictions for the beginning of the universe, but it's also clear that to do that, we have to understand the really foundational questions. What is the Hilbert space? What is everything? So again, that's really a false dichotomy. Also, a similar illustration is Willy Fischler's talk, who took the luminosities of a few supernovae and turned it into a major crisis in string theory. Let's see. Okay, up in the fundamental side, a couple of talks about quantum gravity, about the nature of space and time. Maldacena talk had a lot of new ideas, fruitful ideas. This idea that the eternal black hole had a nice representation in terms of dual Hilbert space, dual CFTs seems very likely to be true. A bit more controversial, the idea about how one sees space-like surfaces. And the final bit, which as I understood it, was that information non-loss was connected with large topology fluctuations. Maybe I understood that, but that seems to me to be the most controversial. That's an old idea. It seems to, I don't believe it. Okay. And then Gary, again, fundamental questions in the nature of space-time. We've gotten used to the idea that topology changes rather freely. It's not such a big deal. But surprisingly, he has shown that it doesn't always happen, that in particular, if you are a black hole horizon, breaking up is hard to do. The final two talks were about the AES-CFT correspondence, and I saved them for the end, partly because I didn't know where to put them. With any duality, information flows in two directions. And for AES-CFT, the fact that we can represent string theory as a gauge theory tells us something fundamental about what string theory is. On the other hand, it also tells us something about the physics of gauge theories. And so AES-CFT goes in the middle, and we had a couple of talks pushing AES-CFT in new directions. So Eva Silverstein talking about things which from the space-time point of view are non-classical, double trace operators, something a bit more quantum than has been done in the past, and Jan de Boer, who adds localized masses, point masses, to the correspondence, and in particular hopes to talk about things in the end like black hole creation from particle scattering. So there is the conference, and it resists summing up in any simple way. As you see, people are pursuing all directions, and they're all good directions. They all need to be explored. Since I'm as bad about making predictions as anyone, I will just leave you with that picture, and you can look for your coincidences. Thank you.
You can't.
Yeah.
I personally like to thank the organizers once again for an absolutely wonderful conference.